Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair. Hello, I am C-3PO Human Cyborg Relations, and welcome to the third episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. Oh, I am so honored and pleased to be here today. But now let me introduce to you your esteemed hosts. We have Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt. And joining them for this special episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, he is the host of the Sarlacc Pit podcast on galacticbinder.com, Chris Hoth Ice Planet Smith. Oh, welcome, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, Jason, look who joined us today. We worked our connections, got us some C-3PO up in here.
Yes. He was very gracious enough to do that for me, but he's got to go help the rebels with something, so he won't be back.
Quite all right. I was glad he could join us. So today we are doing episode 3 now of Wampa's Lair, and we were lucky enough to get Chris Hawkeye's Planet to join us, the founder of the Sarlacc Pit, and I must say the man who inspired me to Star Wars podcasting in general. So, Chris, thanks for being with us tonight.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here. Sounds like it's going to be some fun.
Oh, yes, indeed. So, Jason and I introduced a new topic at the end of the episode last week, which we'll be running with for as long as possible anyway, is these lightsaber matchups, these possible lightsaber matchups. And we introduced to the fans last week the possibility of Luke Skywalker and Darth Maul taking on each other. And we had a few responses. Jason, would you like to read one of those responses that we got?
Yes. On our Facebook page, we actually got a response from Joe Lord Bruticus Gianno. I cannot pronounce his last name. I'm sorry, Joe. From the Dark Empire Radio, and he says, "I hate to admit it, being a huge fan of the dark side and all, but I think Luke would emerge victorious. Maul would put up a fierce fight, and it would be a sight to behold, for sure. But in the end, Maul is too easily distracted. In The Phantom Menace, Maul was so overconfident in himself, toying with Padawan Kenobi while he dangled from a ledge, that he was literally kept from killing his opponent, which he did earlier in the fight with Qui-Gon Jinn. Maul is also a fighter and not much of a thinker. He is all brute force, pun intended, and not a strategist. As such, I think that Maul would probably put up a fierce fight with Luke, but would ultimately fall because of his inability to plan a victory in battle, whereas Luke is not only capable as a warrior, but he also has shown his abilities as a leader."
Great. So, yeah, the consensus, surprisingly, has been Luke. My opinion, of course, I do think Luke would also emerge victorious. I mean, Darth Maul is a fantastic bad guy. I love him in The Phantom Menace. He's absolutely wonderful. But kind of like the brutal one says, you know, he's brute force. He's all passion and aggression. And Luke, I think, would keep his calm in the fight, and I think he eventually would pull out. Now, you know, if you watch the two of them in the films, it would appear that Darth Maul would easily win, but I don't think that would be the case, because Luke is far more powerful in the Force. Darth Maul is a gifted fighter, but I don't think he's much of, you know, he has the full package that Luke can deliver. But that's my thoughts. What about you, Jason?
Well, if Luke is able to stand up to Maul's first onslaught, which I'm sure Maul would go out after him immediately and fiercely, if Luke is able to withstand that, then Luke can outlast Darth Maul, in my opinion. If Luke gets distracted or is surprised too much, he might not prevail. But it would have to be – Maul would have to take out Luke quick in order to win. In my opinion.
Sure. Well, Chris, what about you? What do you think? You're the veteran here.
Well, it's an interesting matchup. I never thought about it until you posed the question. But I think Joe was right. Darth Maul is more brutal, is more tenacious in an attack, and he probably wouldn't think very strategic in any kind of way. Now, it kind of depends on what point you're talking about Luke. If you're talking about Luke and Empire, then no, I think he's still too young, and Darth Maul would just probably take care of him rather quickly because Vader just toyed with him. But if you're talking about Jedi, then I think Luke has the upper hand because he is more calm and he's more in control of his feelings. He's more in control just of the Force in general. And then, of course, if you go EU, then it would be absolutely no contest to me. If you go by the time he started rebuilding the Jedi Academy, then Darth Maul would be absolutely no match, I think, for Luke, because he's by then he's so powerful and so strong and knows how to handle everything in the Force, then I just don't see any kind of a contest. But y'all basically were talking about the movies, right? So
I
would just go with Jedi and say, yeah, I don't think really Darth Maul would have really much of a chance with Luke.
So, yeah, that's good. Yeah, and if you're right, if it was Luke and Empire, that wouldn't be much of a contest. Maul would definitely win. But I was thinking more Luke and Jedi, where he is at his most powerful in the films. So that's my take.
Yeah. So it seems as though the consensus is Luke Skywalker would emerge victorious over Darth Maul. So if you obviously disagree with us, we'd be happy to hear your, you know, your critiques of that and why you think we're wrong. Go ahead and let us know on the Wampa's Lair Facebook page, or, you know, email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. Give us your thoughts. We will be introducing another matchup at the end of tonight's episode. But, you know, as far as our first matchup goes, it appears that Luke Skywalker would emerge victorious. So, well, good. That was fun. So, tonight's topic, we are going to be picking our top five ships from the Star Wars universe. This can include EU if you'd like. And, you know, why don't we hop right into that? Now, I know we each have a couple of honorable mentions. It's hard to just pick five. So, you know, we, of course, have some honorable mentions. And, Chris, I'd like to invite you. Why don't you go ahead and give us one or two of your honorable mentions?
All right. Well, I'll give you two of my honorable mentions. It was weird, of course. You originally gave me the topic, and you just said Star Wars ships. And then I just started making my list, and then I thought about it a couple days later. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not a ship. So I had to ask you to make sure, because I didn't want to come up here with some stuff that wasn't a ship and everything. And I was like, oh, man, I had to rethink my list. So I've been spending most of the day kind of trying to think of or place the ships. I mean, there's so many ships, it's very difficult to kind of pinpoint. You know, you always have, like, your favorite one or two that's just instant. But then the rest of them, you're kind of like, oh, I love all of them. So, for me, honorable mentions have to go with one ship that I believe predominantly was shown in Revenge of the Sith. I don't think it was brought up before then, which would be the ARC 170 fighters. I really like those, to me, because they were so cool with the... When they opened their S-foils, it kind of made it look like it was an early rendition of what the X-Wings would become. And then my other honorable mention is the V-19 Torrent Starfighter, which is predominantly in the Clone Wars. And that is just such a cool looking ship. The way the wings open, the back panel flips, it's just, I've got the toy, and the toy is just, it's a great toy. They did a magnificent job on both of them, ARC 170, both of the toys are just great. So, for me, those are kind of honorable mentions that I just really liked and weren't really justified for me to put in the top five, but really, really close.
Great.
Nice. Nice. the Torrent is also, I didn't have it in my honorable mentions, but it was one that could have made it into my honorable mentions if I so desired to put it there. but anyway.
Sure. Sure.
But my honorable mention, I'll go ahead and go with that, is the Rebel Blockade Runner, which obviously is the first ship if you're going, you know, from when the movie was released, is the first ship we ever see in the films. So, and probably because of that first opening shot, it is such a memorable ship for me personally, and also it's so cool. I also got the Power of the Jedi, I think that's the line, that it came out with the toy with the lights and sound. I found one of those, and that's pretty cool. So that is my honorable mention.
Great. Yeah, well, I'm not going to say much about it because that may or may not be in my top five. But yeah, my honorable mention is actually from the EU, Dash Rendar's ship, the Outrider. I don't know if you guys remember this one. It's, you know, it's basically a sleeker version of the Millennium Falcon. And, you know, Dash Rendar is a great character created for the Shadows of the Empire line. And that, when they came out with that action figure, well, it's not an action figure, the vehicle for the Outrider in 97, I believe, is when it came out, 97 or 98. It was just such a cool looking ship. I mean, it's basically, you know, a smaller version of the Millennium Falcon, and we're told how fast it is and how well equipped it is. And, you know, Dash Rendar continuously makes remarks about how, you know, the Millennium Falcon is nothing but an antiquated version of his hot rod, you know. And I just felt like the Outrider was such a cool ship, and I loved it how in, you know, 97, when they did the special editions, George Lucas includes the Outrider as Ben and Luke are riding the land speeder into the town, and they pan out and you see the big shot of Mos Eisley. You can see off to the left of in the screen, you can watch the Outrider as it's taking off, which I just loved how he put that in there. So that's my honorable mention.
I could see where this list is going already. It kind of goes with the ability for us to have the toy when we were a kid kind of plays a part in this list, I think.
Absolutely.
Most definitely does in mine, so we got some good choices, I think, coming up. All right.
All right.
So, you know what? Chris, why don't you hit us off? What would you put as number five? What was
all
five?
Right. Number five. I kind of have to go again with Revenge of the Sith on this one. It's the Jedi Starfighter. Not the Diamond Virgin one, but the regular kind of really, really cool. I don't even know what you want to call it, a C something or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the way the wings opened up on it, and once again, it was a great toy. It was one of the best ship toys that they came out with over the past several years. It's I've got like four or five of them, various different ones, and it's just a great ship. It's very sleek, smooth. I loved seeing it on the screen. The cockpit is just like right there in the middle. There's really not a whole lot to it. It's just really simple. And I mean, it's just a great looking ship, and we get to see it in so many different takes, so many different colors and various other things. And I don't know. It's just one of those, for the prequels trilogy, those three right there that I've mentioned are standouts to me for vehicles or ships. When you say ships, I always kind of think of small ships, not like the big ships, say like the Block A Runner, which is still one of my favorites. Even though they never had a toy when we was kids, y'all got one when y'all was kids, but
right.
I never did get that, man. I still want to go back and try and pick that up at some point because I've always heard that it was a really, really cool ship.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is nice.
Yeah, that's a great first pick, I would say. I mean, the Jedi Starfighters and Revenge of the Sith, are just such great-looking ships. They're incredibly sleek, incredibly quick. And, you know, what I always see them as is kind of an early version of the A-Wing, which we get to see in Return of the Jedi. But, you know, that's the way I would describe kind of the design of the Jedi Starfighter.
And you know what's strange, though? I mean, that's one of my favorites. And the Diamond version of it is one of my least favorites.
Oh, okay.
Of any ship.
Really?
It's just, yeah, I just I don't like it. I mean, I've got Anakin's. Of course, his is more modified to his personality. And I haven't picked up any of the other ones yet, but I mean, I probably will at some point. But it's just that one and then the Naboo Starfighter are probably my two least favorite ships in the entire galaxy.
Sure, sure.
If you can have a least favorite. Yeah.
We can do that as another episode, least favorite ships.
Well, there you have it. You have my two least favorites, so my list is done. All right, moving along.
All right, Jason, what about you? What's your number five?
My number five, this ship was featured, I guess, most... The spotlight of this was featured mostly in A New Hope, and it's the Y-Wing.
Okay.
I like the Y-Wing fighter. I've always liked the Y-Wing fighter. And I guess I drive a Buick right now, and so something big and slow and armored, you know, sort of just fits for me. So, I like the way that the Y-Wing has been expanded on in the Clone Wars series, and they've done a really good job with that, with showing us early versions and actually showing them in an environment how they're supposed to be, you know, as bombers and, you know, support vehicles like that for strafing tanks and things like that. So, which has been really cool to me. So that is my number five, is the Y-Wing Starfighter.
Very good. Yeah. To me, the Y-Wing is kind of the workhorse of the Rebellion. You know, it's that big, chunky, clunkety ship that's not built for speed, but just simply built for raw power and, you know, raining down destruction. Y-Wing is a great looking ship. So, mm-hmm. I guess I'll go ahead and give my number five. For me, number five is the Tana IV, the blockade runner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the Carillion Corvette. I love this ship. Like you said earlier, Jason, you know, it's the first ship we see in a Star Wars film. And it's just such a great-looking ship. I mean, I love the design of it. You know, it's got, like, this big, bulky head to it. And it's got, you know, those 11 engines, which I now know because of the trivia we were playing Friday night at Fan Days. I had never known that, but we quickly, you know, confirmed it through a Google search. And you know, I love the Blockade Runner. It's such a cool-looking ship. It's really fast. And I love the way they connected it into Revenge of the Sith, where, you know, it's Bail's personal ship. And not to mention just the exterior of this ship, you know, it's a perfect run, you know, perfect name for it, the Blockade Runner. It's not a fighter. It's not meant to be a, you know, a powerhouse ship. It's built for speed. But another, you know, favorite aspect to me of the Tana IV is just the interior of it. I love the open white hallways and stuff. I mean, it's just such a cool looking ship. And, you know, I always thought it'd be really cool someday if I'm ever really rich to build a room in my house that looks like the hallway in the Tana IV. It'd be so cool. A lot of fun. So, all right, that's my number five.
Very nice. Very nice. That'd be nice to have a hallway in a house that just looks like the Tana IV, you know.
Right.
That would be cool.
And your friends have to, like, solder the door down and blow it open to come in, you know. Just like the stormtroopers. So, anyway, Chris, why don't we come back to you for your number four?
Well, I had to say the Y-Wing, you mentioned that was one of my favorites too. It's one of those that was just below the list, and I always liked that from growing up. I always thought that was really cool. We didn't get to see much of it in the films. But my number four is, and my list is going to really show my age, so my list, let's see, number four, the original TIE Fighter. Not the advanced one that Vader flew in, but just a regular plain TIE Fighter. As a kid, I always, it was the sound to this thing. It was just like a screaming, screeching sound that when it flew by. And even as a kid growing up, I always thought, how in the world can that thing fly? With wings going straight up and down, how does it stay in the air? How does it maneuver? And this and the other. And yet, I still don't think that thing can fly, literally. But as a kid, this was just one of my all-time favorite ships. And anytime you heard that noise coming, it was just like, oh my gosh, something bad's coming when you hear it. It's just, I don't know. But just one of my all-time favorites. One of the bad guy ships.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mentioned this last podcast, but when I saw the special editions for the first time when I was seven, I think I had nightmares with the TIE Fighter sound following me, chasing me for about a week or two after seeing the movie. I was But that's a great ship. It's a, you know, iconic ship, but it did not make my list.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you, Jason. Also, great, great ship. Did not make the list, but just, you know, as Chris was saying, you know, the sound of that scream of the TIE fighter is just such a fantastic sound, you know, that to me, I actually, even visually, I used to love the cockpit of the TIE fighter because I'm an awful artist, but when I was in school as a kid and I'd be dreaming of Star Wars all afternoon, the only thing I could draw and make it look decent was the cockpit to a TIE fighter. You know, those, like those canonical circles and stuff. I was like, oh, so cool, I can draw a TIE fighter. And then all you have to do is draw four more lines and you're done. So, oh, great pick, Chris. Thanks.
Well, my number four, and I just want to say real quick that as far as this list is concerned, the top ships, this is a list that, for me, on any given day, could be totally changed because there are so many awesome ships in Star Wars, and you know the order of the ones I've got here could be changed, or some of them could be off the list and others could be on. But as of today, this is my top five favorite, and number four for me is at this point my favorite capital ship in Star Wars, and that is the Nebulon B frigate. It's not the biggest capital ship. They're heading for the medical frigate. Yes.
That is the frigate.
Yes. But it's such a unique looking ship. It's something that it looks like, it almost looks like they took the back half of one ship and the front half of another ship and just connected the two with a long like tube. And it's, you know, it's one of those ships that just sort of shows the nature of the kind of operation the Rebels are able to afford, because, I mean, obviously I know that it was constructed that way, but it almost just looks like something that the Rebels found pieces of and put it together and made it work. And I mentioned this last podcast, but in the battle over Return of the Jedi, the one shot where it's got the Nebulon B frigate coming towards the camera on the left side of the screen and the Star Destroyer going away from the camera on the right side of the screen, blasting at each other with the fighters flying between them, is one of my favorite shots of the space battle over Endor. And that is probably one of the reasons why that makes my list at number four. So,
yeah, I love that ship. But I used to love to play, oh, darn, I can't remember which one it was. It was on the GameCube, but it was one of the Rogue Squadron games. And the last mission is the Battle of Endor. And I remember there's like always like the mission is broken up into three categories. And one of the third parts of the mission is you have to defend the medical frigate. And it was always so hard. I'm like, oh, come on. Why are they all attacking the medical frigate? Just go after a capital ship. Jeez, leave the medical frigate alone. So great. Yeah, that's a great pick. Chris, did you have any remarks about the
I'll give it to you only. It was one of the oddest looking ships, and the way you described how they put it together is kind of, I think, how they actually did put it together. They just kind of come up with something really weird and quirky because they wanted something different and stuck it in the shot, especially at the end of Empire. So I always thought it was one of the coolest ships, but not on my list.
Yes. Well, I'll go ahead and give mine number four, which is, I would be surprised if you guys have this on your list, but it's the Cloud Car from Bespin. I love the Cloud Car, the twin pods. I love the orange painting. I just think it's such a cool looking ship. I mean, I'm an Empire guy, and I love Cloud City. It's my favorite planet in the saga. And these Cloud Cars are just, it looks like such a fun ship too. Like, you know, what do you want to do for the night? I want to go out with my best friend and hop in a cloud car and just zoom around the clouds. Like, it looks like such a fun ship to fly in. And it almost, you know, the way they present it in Empire, it almost looks as if, you know, it's a force to be reckoned with. I mean, Han's flying in and, you know, they open fire on the Falcon. And, you know, again, that guy is just so great. You will not deviate from your present course. You know, it's like, don't mess with the cloud car. I don't know. I just think it's a great looking ship. And that was actually the first Star Wars toy I ever played with. My one older cousin had a bunch of the toys when he was a kid, and he left them all at my grandparents' house. And I remember one of the first toys I ever played with at their house, besides like the Lincoln Logs and all the old like 1950s toys they had, but they had a Cloud Car just sitting in the toy box, and I loved that Cloud Car. It was just so much fun to play around with. So that's my number four.
Well, as a kid, that was I had that obviously as a kid, but it was as a toy, it was the most boring and basic. Had nothing came with it. It had no projectiles, no sound effects, no nothing. The only thing you could do was open up the cockpit and pull the landing gear down. But I still had it, and of course, I still played with it. It's a cool ship.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. It was, for me, that was one of the ships that I could never figure out. Like you, Chris, you know, saying, you know, how does the TIE fighter fly? I was like, how do two people fly the Cloud Car? You know, do they each have a steering wheel and have to do it at the same time in order to go the same direction? What happens if they want to go different directions? Does it break apart? You know, I mean, I could never figure that out. And I think they made fun of that in one of the Family Guy Star Wars, I think, then something, something, something Dark Side. I think they made fun of that. But that was one of the ships I could never figure out. And I was like, why would they do that? But
yeah. Yeah.
Is one a pilot and one a gunner? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So, great. We'll move on to number three, Chris. What was your number three pick?
This one, I don't know. This one probably won't be a surprise to people that have listened to me or, you know my screen name. So number three is the Snowspeeder.
Mm.
As a kid, when this movie came out, I mean, Star Wars changed everything for me and so many other people. But when Empire came out, me and Madge discussed this so much that it's the development of the characters. It went, you got so many new worlds, so much of a, I mean, they just really went into depth into the story. And I just remember these Snowspeeders were so cool looking. And it was a really, really cool toy. The toy, they did a great job with it. You had the cockpit with two characters that you could put in there. And you had your gun on the back end with the grappling hook that was kind of lame, but it worked decent. And it just one of the coolest toys. And just, it just, when you see it on screen coming over those hills and everything, just the wrong, all the sound, it was just... It is just still one of my all-time favorite ships. I get excited every time I see it in Empire.
Yeah.
I was wondering how high on your list this was going to be, Chris.
Yeah, it's a great ship, and I don't know why it's not on my top five. I love the T-47 Snowspeeder. I actually just finished Timothy Zahn's Choices of One novel, and... It's essentially a novel that takes place between A New Hope and Empire, and it talks about how they go about getting the T-47s. It's a pretty neat little backstory, but I won't spoil it for anyone. But yeah, those are such cool looking ships, and again, like you said, Chris, you know, connecting it to the toys. I mean, the toys help make what you would fall in love with as far as ships go. And I loved that toy. I mean, it had really cool sound effects to it. It had the light up, you know, blasters. But the one thing I always found so puzzling is, the hell did they put a tow cable on it for? Like, when did they ever think we're going to need a lot of string? You know, I guess it's great that they did, but I was always like, why is this a primary weapon on the Snowspeeder? Oh, what should we put on this? Maybe some proton torpedoes. No, wait. How about a lot of rope? So, yeah, that's a great pick.
Oh. I'll go ahead with my number three, and Chris, I am sorry in advance, but my number three is actually the N1 Naboo Starfighter.
Really?
Really,
this
really.
This will be interesting then.
Yes, I'm a weird person, I freely admit that, and some of my favorites in Star Wars are very very different from a lot of the mainstream things. And so this is one of those.
Right. Jason, I believe your favorite song is Jedi Rocks, and you also love Jar Jar Binks.
Well, my favorite song is not Jedi Rocks. I do like it, but I do like Jar Jar Binks a lot, but that's a hot topic for another day, and I'm not going to go into that.
Indeed.
But I guess, you know, The Phantom Menace came out when I was 11, 10 or 11, and that was one of the big highlights of my year, was seeing that movie. I saw it four times in the theater before it was released on video, back on VHS back in those days. Oh, wow, that's old. the Naboo Starfighter was just such a sleek and cool ship that it almost didn't make sense for me as to why it was a starfighter. It looked more like something that you would find in a hot rod or something like that. You know, it's got the bright yellow paint, and it's got the chrome trim and everything. Oh, and it just happens to have an archer unit and blaster guns. So it was just one of the things, and I remember seeing concept art for it before the movie came out. And I actually thought it flew the other direction with the three prongs being in the tail and the backs of the engines being the front of the ship. And so I remember watching the movie and going, whoa, why is it flying backwards? Oh, I guess I was wrong. But I got the toy for that, and I think that was actually the first larger vehicle that I think I owned. I didn't collect a lot of the stuff from that was released around the time of the special editions at first. I've gone back and gotten a lot of those later on. But this was like the first vehicle I had, and it, you know, had the flying sounds and the blaster sounds, and it was just, you could put the figure in there, and it had R2 on it, and I loved it. And I'm actually going to get the new one when they release it next year for The Phantom Menace in 3D. So,
great.
That's my number three. And
well, you know,
Chris,
for me, the reasons you like it is the reasons I don't. It's just, well, you know, growing up, and everybody can agree on this, that the original trilogy and part of its charm was the used universe. And then we get to a higher society starting with episode 1, and everything is newer. And I guess that's kind of part of the reason why maybe I don't like it so much, is because it is so new and clean and crisp, and like right off the assembly line. And not to mention, it just looks odd to me. You could say a Star Wars ship looks odd. That's, you know, kind of redundant because they're all odd, but I don't know. But and the color, too. Not crazy about yellow, but, you know.
Yeah.
But I figured you would be excited about next year going to have a brand new, I think a whole new redone of it coming out. So
yeah, it looks
to see.
The next one, according to the pictures, it doesn't have the R2 unit attached anymore. It's got a hole for where you can put an R2 unit into it. So that'll be interesting.
Oh yeah, that's right. I saw something on that. It's like you open the cockpit, you put the droid in, you turn him sideways, and it clicks him into place or something or other.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
It looks cool. Yeah, it looks really nice the way they got the features that I've seen so far on it. So it might be something I might be interested in picking up just for the heck of it. But you know, hey. But moving along.
Yes, I have no comment.
Is it that bad?
Neither negative nor positive. I mean, it's a good-looking ship. Nothing I'm crazy about, though. But my number three, I'm gonna cheat a little bit here. Well, actually, no, I'll save that. I won't cheat yet. My number three is the X-Wing. I mean, just such a classic ship. You know, it is for the Rebellion what the TIE Fighter is for the Empire. You know, and like Chris said, the TIE Fighter is just such a classic vintage ship when you think Star Wars. And I think I always just loved the X-Wing. It's such a, you know, it's a great looking ship. I love the way that it goes into attack mode and it unlocks the S-foils and, you know, hence giving it the name, the X-Wing. And I always just thought, you know, if I could own my own little, if I ever wanted to get away someday, the X-Wing would be the perfect ship to just fly around in, because it's nice and little and cozy. You know, bring my pet droid with me. It'd be a good time. And the where I first fell in love with the X-Wing, again, the toy helped a lot. But actually, when I read Heir to the Empire, which was one of the first EU novels ever written back in 91 by Timothy Zahn. There's a scene where Luke Skywalker is basically stranded in his X-Wing in the middle of nowhere in the galaxy. And it just sounds like, I don't know, it's supposed to be a miserable scene, but my interpretation of it is, wow, that sounds like a lot of fun, just hanging out in my X-Wing. But I don't know, I love the X-Wing.
I shall reserve comment.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, I'll reserve comment.
All right, great. Well, then why don't we hop down to number two?
All right, well, Jason, you mentioned that your list could change on any given day. Well, mm-hmm. I would kind of have to agree with part of my list, but for me, the top two ships pretty much will never change. It's just like always been my two favorites. And moving right along, saving my comments, my number two is the X-Wing. growing up as a kid, like you said, the original vintage Kenner toy was really cool. It had the great pop-up wings. It was smaller compared to what we get now because the ones now are even better. They're more to scale. And I can't wait to get my hands on that Death Star trench run at some point. But it is just a great ship. It's a single manned fighter that can actually fly through hyperspace, and not many one man fighters can do that.
Right.
I always found it interesting as a kid, very fascinating that when in the attack of the Death Star and it starts firing, that all four lasers don't fire in sequence with each other.
Hmm.
Or mm-hmm. not. Sequence is probably the wrong word, but they fire basically, I guess, in sequence, one, then another, then another, then another. They don't all go together. Right. I always thought that was really cool. It was something different as opposed to the TIE fighter. It just, when they fire, they both come out at the same time.
Hmm.
And it, right. to me, it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's about the only ship that does that. So, and it, not to me, it's just one of the fastest one-man fighters in the Star Wars universe. And like you, just like what you said, it's just as Luke's. To me, we kind of, when I see the X-Wing, I think of Luke.
Hmm.
I know that there's more, but to me, it's Luke and his X-Wing. And he's got R2 sitting right up there behind him, stuck out in space, just do-do-do, but they can have conversations back and forth and talk. And the one thing that still kind of cracks me up when you watch the movie is, like, especially on Dagobah, Luke climbs up the ladder and gets in the cockpit. They go back to show a shot of Yoda, and then they come back to Luke, and there's no ladder. So where does the ladder go? You know, it's just like, what does he do? Just push it off and throw it over the ground, and he'll pick up another one when he gets to where he's going or something. But to me as a kid, it's always been one of my absolute favorites. Just, I love playing with that thing. Pop open the wings. It was just so cool. Even without the wings open, it doesn't have to. I don't think it has to be open in order for it to be in combat mode, but I think it would be preferred. But anyway, any comments?
Yeah.
Well, that is my number two as well. So,
all right.
It is one of those iconic ships, and it's, you know, seeing A New Hope at 7 years old, you know, flying into the Death Star, all those shots. And I mentioned this last podcast, but it's just, it's like I was flying in there with Luke to blow up the Death Star. And it was, and I think that whole aspect of it was that I was invited to be a part of that, made it one of my favorites almost instantly. And then, of course, it's featured heavily in the rest of the movies and in the EU and the X-Wing series. It's 9 books about, you know, an X-Wing squadron. And then reading EU, I became more of a fan of Wedge. And so actually a couple of years ago when I think Target had their Wedge Antilles exclusive X-Wing, I was really, really looking forward to getting that. And I went to go pick it up one day and it was gone. And I was very, very, very disappointed.
Well, did you ever get it?
No, I don't have it yet. And I want to find that X-Wing.
Yeah. Luckily for me, since I work for Target, I was able to get one. And to me, the biggest, coolest thing for getting that particular ship was the freaking ladder that came with it. You got an actual ladder that you could put up next to the X-Wing. I was like, actually, two of them, you got two different ladders that came with it, which is really, really cool. You finally get actual ladders.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I mean, the X-Wing is such a great ship. I mean, it's the ship that, you know, I like the way you put it, Jason, you know, where you climb into that and you get to be part of the trench run. And they do so much, you know, in the film, they do such a good job of just filming from the canopy. You feel like you are, you know, in that ship. And, you know, to me, probably two of the most classic Star Wars video games were X-Wing and TIE Fighter. And, you know, you get to get behind the helm of the most popular fighter in the Star Wars galaxy, which is the X-Wing. And it's just such a fun ship to be part of.
Yeah, I never got to play the X-Wing and TIE Fighter games, but I did get to play Star Wars Rogue Squadron, and that still today is one of my favorite Star Wars games to date.
That is a good game. Much better than X-Wing, I will say that. Great. Well, I will go ahead and give my number two. And I have a feeling we're all going to have the same number one, but we'll find out. And my number two is the Executor, or the Executor, however you say it, Darth Vader's Super Star Destroyer, his flagship. Again, just a great ship. You know, to me, you know, when they made the films, you know, the original trilogy is, you know, bookended with the Death Stars. You know, you have the first one in A New Hope, and then the second one in Jedi. And, you know, they obviously don't have some huge terrorizing super starship for Empire, but the Executor is such a cool ship. To me, it puts the Death Stars to shame anyway. Yeah, it doesn't have some cool laser cannon that can destroy a planet, but it's just, I mean, when you first see that shot in Empire, when, you know, that they leave Hoth and you finally get to see the bad guys, and, you know, you see this shadow going over all these Star Destroyers, and you're like, what the heck is this? What is going on? And they pan out, and there's this huge Star Destroyer, and they've got all the other Star Destroyer sets next to them, and it just looks like they look like micro machines next to the Star Destroyer. And it's such, you know, what a cool looking ship. And again, just like I was saying with the Tana IV, the way the interior of that Star Destroyer looks, again, I mean, it's very similar to all the other Star Destroyers we get to see the inside of, but just it's almost like the exact opposite of the Tana IV. It's all black walls with these skinny white lights. And again, my dream home will have a hallway of the Tana IV, and then the next hallway is going to be, you know, the hallway from the Super Star Destroyer. And the Super Star Destroyer has that awesome meditation chamber that Darth Vader gets to hang out in. It's such a cool looking little antechamber, and not to mention the bridge walkway. And, you know, every time you see Vader just looking out over this thing, I mean, you got to think to yourself, this starship itself is probably the size of, you know, the island of New York City, if not larger. And it's just huge. This is at his command, the amount of power that this thing has. And to think, you know, I mean, we know how many TIE fighters just a Star Destroyer can hold. Well, think of that times 12, if not more, for the Super Star Destroyer. I mean, it's such a cool ship. And to me, it's the only sad thing about it is how it was so easy to destroy in Jedi. You know, all they had to do is fly A-Wing through the bridge, and, you know, and I always thought it was such an interesting shot as it goes crashing into the Death Star in Jedi. You know, you've got just like this little flame coming out of the, you know, the little bridge unit, and yet this entire massive ship goes down just by that. I mean, so cool. Great ship.
It is a very good ship, very cool ship. I'm much more of a fan of the heroes and the rebels and stuff like that. And so I was along with, you know, the Mon Calamari cheering as that thing went down. I was like, yes, yes, they blew it up. They destroyed it. But that's me.
Sure. I agree. Another great ship.
Yeah. Anywho, number one. It is down to the number one ship in the Star Wars universe for us, and I would not be surprised if we all have the same one. But Chris,
we don't.
I bet you Jason picked like you know, like the Gungan fighter or something, but
the Gungan sub.
Yeah. Jason, I love that.
I was thinking we would probably have the same top three myself, but okay. So I guess I'll go ahead with my number one then.
Sure.
No doubt, it's always has been, always will be the Millennium Falcon. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's the greatest ship in the galaxy. It made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs, which is what? Supposed to be a distance and not time, but anywho. To me, it was always so cool because it was like he's flying around his own house in space, you know? I mean, forget a ship. This thing is a house flying around. And I love the design, the interior design of it and everything, having the little cockpit like stuck out on the side just a little bit. Having the toy as a kid, it was one of my favorite. I remember getting that at Christmas of 1978 and played with that and still have a vintage, original, complete Millennium Falcon. And then when they retooled it a little bit for the next generation, I thought it was really cool. They added a lot of sound effects and lights to it. But then when they redid this last version, oh my gosh, it was the best $150 I ever spent on a stinking toy in my life. Come home, put that thing together, and it's like a little kid that's sitting there pushing buttons and playing with things and just like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And I mean, it's just plain and simple. It's the most iconic ship in the entire galaxy. Anybody, if they've never seen the movie, you can show them a picture of it and they would know what that is. Oh yes, I know what that is. Even if they haven't seen the movie. So, yeah, I mean, we could go on for hours probably talking about the Millennium Falcon. The sound effects were incredible. Ben Burtt did an awesome job with all of the various nuances of it. And to me, it was always so cool. It was the thing hardly ever worked half the time, but it always got them where they needed to go. Beating on it and to make it work, it always tinkering. It was just basically like a hot rod put together, and he had to constantly keeping it together because they were constantly getting into trouble and scrapes and, you know, whatnot. So, moving along to the next person, what do you think about it, Jason?
Well, I do love the Millennium Falcon. It did not make my list, but it's probably because it's one of those ships that is so heavily featured, it's almost like a given. And so I was just like, oh yeah, the Millennium Falcon, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's one of those ships that it's you see almost every little detail about it in the movies. And so, but for me, the ships are something that I like the smaller, you know, one-man fighter ships, and the Millennium Falcon is great, and I would love to someday get my hands on the latest Millennium Falcon toy that they did. It just looks incredible. I just never had the money to buy it when I could find it. And now, of course, that it's online, it's gone another 50, 100 bucks, you know, depending on where you're looking. So
shipping.
Exactly. It's one of these days I am going to get that, but it did not make my list. Do you want to go ahead and Carl and talk about the Millennium Falcon before I give my number one and totally ruin this party?
Yeah, I'm stressing over here. I'm so curious to hear what your number one is. But yeah, obviously, like Chris said, it always has been and always will be the Millennium Falcon. I mean, I was a Han Solo fan big time as a kid. I mean, I still love Han Solo, but as you know, as Chris said, and Chris, you almost took the words right out of my mouth. You know, it's your house in space. You know, the Millennium Falcon isn't just a little one-man fighter. I mean, this is Han Solo's livelihood. His entire life is spent in the Millennium Falcon, just cruising the galaxy. And again, all the interior shots we get of it, although we don't get to see all that much of it. You know, I've always wanted to see what the living quarters look like. But you know, I mean, it's just such a cool-looking ship. The cockpit is amazing. And I always felt confused, you know, they're flying this thing with a cockpit off to the right. It's like, man, you got so much ship to the left. I mean, how much do you have to compensate when you're especially flying through an asteroid field? I mean, I don't get it. But, you know, it's just such a great looking ship. And, you know, I think what the Millennium Falcon offers more than anything besides just being a cool ship is it offers, you know, what so many, and I think this is why people love Han Solo, is what's so attractive is like Chris has already said, you know, it's that house in space. You know, you can just get away, go wherever you, it's a great ship, you know, to just hop in and go do your thing. There's such a sense of freedom in the Millennium Falcon. And, you know, I think that's what makes it, for me, the greatest ship. And again, not to mention the toy, you know, I mean, like you just said, Jason, I too hope to get my hands on the new one. And I know, Chris, you said you've got it. I got a chance to, you know, look at one and touch it and, you know, love on it a little bit at Fan Days back in Texas. But I was just like, oh, man, I got to get me one of these someday. But
I tell you what, I'm going to do a video review of it, and I will get that out on YouTube, and then you can actually see what it does. You get to see some of the sound effects and whatnot, and you get to drool all over it.
Oh, sweet. I eagerly...
Crystal, get you going.
Crystal's going to be blue-balling us through YouTube.
I eagerly await that video.
The coolest... feature of all the, they did so much great detail with this ship and the sound effects. They added so many lines, so many more sound effects. But the hands down, the best feature of the whole thing is the landing, is the boarding ramp. You click a button and that thing drops. It makes the actual sound from the movie of it opening, and it has the lights on the end of the boarding ramp, just like you see in the Minot Cave. And I'm like, that is the coolest thing. That alone was worth $150.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about, I mean, you're right. We really don't get, we get to see a lot of the ship, but we really don't get to see a lot of, like, the living quarters and whatnot. I've always wanted to get a hold of the Incredible Cross Sections book that does show all the details of these ships. And that's one I want to pick up. But we had one that we gave away last Christmas. We got a couple of copies. I can't think of the exact name of it again, but it's Millennium Falcon Storybook or something to that effect. It was geared towards kids. It was the really thick cardboard type pages, and this was great. This was great for an adult because I sat there and flipped through and read the whole book and was just like, "This is so cool." And each page you flip is another layer of the Millennium Falcon, and it shows you different details of the ship, shows you what these things do. And at Fan Days, I noticed they had their own booth, this particular book company, and I apologize off the top of my head, I don't remember, I'd have to look it up. They have another book that's just come out, and this one's on Darth Vader, and as you flip through the pages, it reveals more of his suit, more of details and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, oh, cool. So that's another book. And it's only like a $20, $25 book.
Wow.
It's worth it. But to me, I want to get my hands on that Incredible Cross Sections type book that does have the Millennium Falcon and some of the other main ships, because it really goes into depth and shows you all the details of the ships, Millennium Falcon and others included. So,
yeah.
Cool.
It's just, you know, when I see the Millennium Falcon, my heart flutters. I love this ship. I mean, it's phenomenal. And, you know, I don't have the new revamped toy of it, but when I was a kid, you know, I had the first Power of the Force one that they came out with, you know, in 95, and that thing was huge to me, and I loved it. It was so much fun, and the sound effects were great. And my favorite feature always to that was, you know, how they did they had the little hideaway, you know, stowaway cabin where you know, Han would put his smuggler stuff in. And I used it for this very same purposes. Now, I won't go into detail as to what, as this is a family show, but I used to hide the Millennium Falcon. It's to this day still parked under my bed in my dad's house. And in that little hidden storage unit, I used to keep all those things I didn't want my parents to find when I was in high school and whatnot, because ain't no way they think that stuff's going to be in your action figures under the bed. So I loved that toy. It, you know, it kept a lot of secrets for me, to say the least. And you know, it's so much fun. Every time I see Han Solo get behind the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon, it's again like they are one. The Millennium Falcon and Han Solo, like Chris was saying with Luke and the X-wing, Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon and Chewbacca. I mean, it's a package deal. And the Millennium Falcon is what gives them their license to be who they are and just, you know, do what they want to do. And, you know, I love it. Like you said, Chris, we could talk about this for hours, but, you know, I'm getting impatient and I really want to know what the heck Jason has for number one. So, please make or break this episode, won't you?
Well, I'm sorry, but I think I'm going to end up being 2 for 2 on Chris's worst list. This is going to be the Delta 7 Jedi Starfighter.
Yes. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. I'm really not kidding.
This had to be good. Why?
For starters, I just thought it was such a unique thing in which, you know, it was the first time we got to see Jedi piloting, you know, starfighters and things like that. But the aspect of it that they, part of the way that they flew it was with the Force. You know, they had that little headband thing that they put on, and they flew it with the Force and things like that. And I thought that was really cool. I loved the look of it. It was very simple and compact and really small. And I don't know what rush hour for you guys is like when you're, you know, in your cities, but here in San Antonio, if you hit the wrong spot at the wrong time, rush hour is just a nightmare. And so I was like, I wish I had a Jedi Starfighter. I could just fly over everything and just go and park in a parking space with it. That was the biggest thing for me at first as to why I wanted it, is because that would be the ship I would want, because it's small enough that it could almost fit, maybe take up like 2 or 3 parking spaces and you'd be fine. I want something like that where I can just fly over all of these people in traffic and just go and have my little R2 unit and just go across town, across the state, wherever, just me and my R2 unit, and just, you know, not worry about anybody else on the road. So that was the biggest thing for me at first. And then
you know,
I just
the other
sort of,
ships can do that too, right?
Well, yes, but it's small enough that you can, you know, get in places where some of those other ships can't. Like the X-Wing has the big wings on the side, and the Y-Wing is too long, and it's got those huge engines, and you're going to, you know, have that all across the lanes of parking, the parking lanes. But, you know, I don't know. That's – it's just – I can't explain why. I really can't. But I just love it, and I do have the toy of it. That was one of the first things I picked up when Attack of the Clones came out. I picked up the Kit Fisto action figure. And I shudder to think what people are going to think of me when I say this, but I picked up the Kit Fisto action figure, the Jar Jar action figure, and the Jedi Starfighter all within, like, 2 weeks. So, before seeing the movie. So, that's probably why. but, and I'm sorry if I tripped us all up at the end of the show here, but... But yes, like I said, I'm not a normal Star Wars fan. I'm not exactly normal in anything else either, but I'm a bit out of the box.
That's great. You know, that's fine, Jason. I mean, that's Star Wars. You know, there isn't... That's the idea. There's no right and wrong, you know? And,
it's just ironic that I mentioned the 2 vehicles my least favorite, and then you're on both on your list. That's just... What are the odds?
I know. You mentioned that, and I had to mute my microphone because I was really starting to laugh. I was starting to laugh, and I didn't want to give anything away at that point. So,
yeah. That's great, and you know that's the fun of doing something. You know, it's not what you expect. That's what makes it exciting.
All right. Well, I have a question then. Interesting. What since all of our lists are revealed, any particular ones that you kind of maybe think is a surprise that weren't on anybody's list?
Yes, I'm surprised this wasn't on mine, and I almost tied it in there with my number 2, the Executor, but the Slave One. I love the Slave One. I'm like, how the heck did I not put this on my list?
That was actually on my list, and I removed it.
Okay.
I was surprised that nobody said Darth Vader's TIE Fighter.
Oh, I hate Darth Vader's TIE Fighter.
Really?
Yeah, I don't... It's like, what's with the wings, Darth? Like... Come on.
We've been talking about doing this topic. It's on our list for future podcasts. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say it on this show. I can probably guarantee you that when we get to our list, that Matt's top 1 and 2 will be the Millennium Falcon and Darth Vader's TIE Fighter, or vice versa. I can probably guarantee you those two are the top spot.
You're probably right.
I think it's a little odd. These really aren't ships. They're more, would probably be more categorized as a vehicle, but nobody mentioned anything about the speeder bike or the land speeder.
I think the reason I didn't is, again, I would view those more as vehicles than as ships.
Yeah, that's why it's not on any of my list. I thought about maybe seeing if the speeder bike would make it into my top five, but I was like, well, that's not a ship. That's
it's
tied to the ground. It's tied to the ground.
Exactly.
A ship has to be able to go in space. That was
up on the bottom of them, Jason. But
all right, well, I got a question for y'all. I had originally made my list, and I had one that was on there, but it wasn't a ship. And I was like, oh, no, wait a minute. He said ships. I got to ask him this. Any guesses as to which vehicle was on my list?
The AT-AT.
I don't know. AT-AT, Chris?
I tell you what, people got to get to know me too well, don't they? And I must say, that's another incredible ship or toy that they come out with. The new, I still have, of course, have the vintage one from when I was a kid. I've got that sitting up in here. I got the Galactic Hero AT-AT sitting there next to the big Mama Jamma of the new one. And like the Millennium Falcon, they're both just super incredible.
I've got the new one. I actually, one of my friends found it on a clearance rack at Walmart for $50. And he was like, you want me to pick this up for you? And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
he called me at work, and I was at a place where I was able to get outside and answer the phone call. And he was like, you know, I found this, it's $50. You want me to pick it up? And I was like, yes. And I just, so I was really, really excited to get that and put it together. I got
home. Obviously that was the regular version and not the vintage box, right?
Correct. That was the big regular one.
I got my hands on, I had to have the vintage box. And,
right.
Well, let me ask this. Any other big vehicle? I'm assuming, Carl, you don't have any of the toys, ships and stuff, because you haven't really collected, right?
Yeah, I haven't collected much in the cheapers, probably in the past 7 years. So I haven't, the last vehicle I got, gosh, I want to say it was, I can't even remember. I mean, it might have been the snow speeder in 97.
Well, funny enough, you know, he does like the Millennium Falcon. When we were at Fan Days, he had picked up a Millennium Falcon. And it was funny because he come back to the hotel room, Jason, and he's sitting there. And the night after he got it, we were sitting there, and he said, by the way, do you know what this is? He knew it was Millennium Falcon, but he didn't know exactly what it was, like what line or this and the other. So I pick it up. I'm looking at all the details, and I'm looking at the copyright. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I know what it is. It just happened to register with me. I knew what it was. But as
That's
far
funny.
As the Jason, which I had the, of course, the super, the or let's see, you know, the big Millennium Falcon, the AT-AT, and then I picked up the Rebel, Republic Transport, the one that has the 10 wheels.
The Juggernaut, the
I
the one that's got the wheels. That oh yeah, that oh the turbo tank.
Yeah,
there we go.
I picked that up at work or on clearance a couple Christmases ago for $50. We had, after Christmas, we had like 80 of them, 80 or 90 of them in. And I don't know why we got so many of them in, knowing that we're not going to sell them all at $100 a pop. And they started putting them on clearance. And of course, the day they went on clearance, I grabbed one for $50. And then I was just steadily, me and my friend Scoot, if anybody's heard our show, we work together, and he's been on the show a couple times, and we're constantly, you know, we'll text each other, hey, we got this in, and whatever. And we were both watching it, waiting for it to go down further so we could get some more. And we were watching, and it dropped, I think, just like $10 or something or other. And I was waiting for it to hit like $25. I was waiting for it to go to the 75%. And I came in one day, and when it hit 25%, I came in, and there, and somebody else had come in and cleaned out what we had left. I was like, I was hoping to grab two or three more of those bad boys.
Man.
But I was just excited that I grabbed one for $50, and I was like, man, I don't want to spend $50 right now, but I gotta have it. I mean, it's one of those, you can't pass up some deals. You just look at it and you're like, crap. Okay, well, I want to eat this week. You know, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's funny.
All right. Well, what kind of, Carl, you don't collect, you just kind of started collecting a little bit. Jason, what exactly do you collect and focus on?
I collect a lot of the 3¾-inch figures and vehicles and things like that. Mainly figures, because I don't have, at this point, I don't have room for any more vehicles.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing too.
I'm waiting for the next wave of the vintage line and the Clone Wars line to come out. There's a couple things I want in there. I'm an opener. I open everything because I like displaying. I like displaying them all in various action poses and things like that. And so I know some people, when I say things like that, some of the diehard collectors out there sort of cringe at the fact that I open everything. And I don't keep all of the packaging. I keep maybe the card back, and that's about it. that's the way I collect. And so if I can find something that has, you know, a damaged box or something online, I will go ahead and buy that simply because it knocks the price down, you know, $10-$20, depending on what it is. And so I'll get it because I'm going to open it anyways. So that doesn't bother me in the least. But I do that's what I focus on a lot. And actually the latest stuff I got, I picked up quite a bit of stuff at Fan Days. I picked up the latest Jabba the Hutt that they have with the throne with Ula and Salacious Crumb and all his like pillows and everything he's got. That's on there.
Great. That was a great piece. I got that myself.
Yeah, I picked up a loose A-wing fighter for $15. Great deal, and a couple of other figures that to try and fill some holes in my collection.
Yeah.
But then I also recently here picked up, I think the last thing I bought was the Clone Wars Kit Fisto in snow gear, 3¾-inch figure. And I'm a huge Kit Fisto fan, and my goal is to someday have one of everything of Kit Fisto. So at least one of everything of Kit Fisto. So, but that's my collecting at this point. And I'm trying to cut down a little bit right now because we're coming into Christmas and I'm getting ready to move for college and stuff at the end of the year, beginning next year. So I've got other things I need to save up for. But yeah. That's what I collect.
You can always go back. As painful as it is, you can always go back and fill in holes.
Right.
You know, a lot of times you can get great deals later, and then sometimes you just, by the look of the draw, some lines end up being really hard to get a hold of, and they're even more expensive. But, you know, that's just how it goes. Carl, what kind of things, anything in particular that you like collect or that you look for or anything?
Yeah, not too much right now. I wish I had the time and the money to collect. I just don't. I don't have the space for it is the main thing. But, you know, I mean, I just picked up my first Force FX lightsaber, and I love this. But this will probably be the last thing I buy for a while. I mean, I'll save up to get some neat stuff when I'm at C6 over the summer.
Tell you, though, that Celebration, you think that what we had at Fan Days was a very good selection. Celebration will be even better.
That's great.
Being able to get stuff. Because you'll have a lot of other major dealers there. I know there's one that I was disappointed wasn't at Fan Days, but they'll most definitely will be at Celebration as long as they're still in business. There's a T-shirt company called Stylin' Online. They have some of the greatest, coolest T-shirts. They have belt buckles, all kinds of stuff.
And yeah.
I plan to, when I go to Celebration, to have about $100 just to be spending on some T-shirts. Because they do great deals. You know, like $35 for a shirt, which is not great. But then they'll do like 2 for $50 or, you know, stuff like that. They'll do a lot, or, you know, 5 for $100, that sort of thing. They really do some great deals now. Continue, because I wanted to tell you a little bit about me, but sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, it's fine. That's where I'm at, and I think, you know, we should wrap this up before we start hopping into a new topic here.
But first, Chris, tell what kind of stuff do you collect?
Oh, Lord.
Anything and everything?
Pretty much anything and everything. You know, I was telling somebody this at work the other day. I said, you know, growing up, I was so hooked on Star Wars. Now, as a kid, Battlestar Galactica came out, and they had toys, a couple of ships, and action figures. The same thing with Buck Rogers, and I'd pick up a couple here and there. But it got to a point, growing up when I was like 11, maybe even 12, probably before that, Mom said, no more. I had so much, I was so into Star Wars that I couldn't get anything outside of Star Wars, period, when it came to toys, because I was so into it, and she's like, you're not going to start on other stuff, because I was a completist as a kid. And now me, I do buy tons and tons and tons of figures that I'll open, but I also, like with the vintage figures, I want them on the card. And like me and Matt's May had discussed it, it kind of becomes a really difficult because the new vintage figures are so articulated in such great detail. I have to have two, one on the card and one to open, to put in with like a diorama or, you know, display like you're talking about. And I was kind of the same way with vehicles for a long time. I wouldn't buy any because I had nowhere to put them. And once I started to pick up a few, I was like, okay, well, I'll hang them from the ceiling. I have no room, so I'll just, you know, I'll make room, hang them from the ceiling. And, you know, but like, for example, the Millennium Falcon, and I have nowhere to put these things, but it's kind of like me and Scoot talking about it. Well, that's irrelevant. You got to have it. It doesn't matter that we don't have anywhere to put it. You know, that's just one of those certain items. And we've been getting in on a steady pace here at work, Wave 8 and Wave 9 of the vintage figures, which is great because we're getting a lot of new figures in. But, of course, you know, I don't have the money to be spending on them right now because I've got to focus on other things, like, you know, like y'all said. But yeah. It was really funny the other day. We get paid every other Friday, and this past Friday, I get a text late that night, a friend of mine that we work with. Now, he is not a Star Wars figure collector. He buys Marvel, other kind of stuff. And every now and then, he'll pick up some Star Wars figures. And he sent me a message and was like, oh, yeah, we got some new figures in. I picked up the Slave Leia and the TIE Fighter pilot. And I said, "What? Oh, I lost my mind. I got upset." And he didn't understand. He thought I was joking. And and I didn't, you know, cursed him out in the email or whatever. And and he responded back to me, and I ignored him because I knew I was going to see him the next morning. And, of course, as soon as I got there, I went looking for him. And I found him, and I said, dude. He's like, are you serious? Are you upset? I said, yeah, I'm upset. I said, did you open those two figures? I was mad. Because not only that, he's an opener, right? And Scoot had already, he was there the day before, and he come in before me, and he saw this guy. And he still told him we had new figures. He's just like, yeah, okay, shrugged his shoulders because it probably was the same thing we'd been getting in. And we'd already, you know, picked through and picked up a few, and he wasn't excited. He hit that corner and saw what we did have, and he came back around and said, dude. And he had those two in his basket to buy. And I was like, I told him, I said, I'd have taken them from you. I mean, he had the Slave Leia, even though it was on a Return of the Jedi card and not a Revenge, but he also had the TIE Fighter pilot that was on a Revenge card. And he said, dude, you said you didn't have the money. I said, it was payday. Hello? I have money for Slave Leia, believe me. It was just funny. And I, of course, proceeded to tell him and said, those two come back in, you hide them. You take them and you let me know that they're there so I can come get them. Well, of course, he can't do that, but, you know, at any rate.
Great.
I was upset because I knew the boy opened the cards. And I was like, did you open them? He said, no, I haven't yet. And I'm like, yet? So, at any rate.
Great.
Funny moment at work.
Well, great. This has been a lot of fun talking Star Wars, talking our favorite ships, and talking some collecting, which I am unfortunately not much to add to because I haven't done a whole lot of that in a while. But we're gonna go ahead and Jason and I are gonna introduce our lightsaber number 2 matchup of the week. And so for the next show, we'd like you guys to discuss who do you think would win if Count Dooku went up against Darth Vader from the OT. So who would win in a lightsaber duel between Darth Vader? We're not talking Episode 3 Darth Vader. We're talking the masked Darth Vader and Count Dooku. So please feel free to discuss that. You know, hit us up on Facebook, Wampa's Lair Podcast on Facebook, or our website is wampaslairpodcast.podbean.com. And our email address is wampalairpodcast@gmail.com. So please feel free to give us your feedback. And Chris, how can people get in touch with you?
Facebook, facebook.com/SarlaccPitPodcast. Also Twitter, @SarlaccPitCast. And then, of course, our email address, podcast@galacticbinder.com. And if I can say right quick, we have started voting for the first annual Star Wars Music Video Festival. We've started to where you can vote for your fan favorite video. So everybody that's listening or whatever, you go over, jump on the it's at galacticbinder.com, and then as soon as you get there, you'll see the logo for the first annual Music Video Festival, and then click on that, and from there you can watch all the videos that have been submitted. And then there's also another link there after you watch the videos to choose your favorite and vote for it. And you can vote more than once. You can vote for more than one video if you like two or three of them. And, there you go. So,
and I have 2 videos submitted, just throwing that out there.
Great.
You do? Oh.
I do.
Cool. Well, wonderful. Jason, would you do us the honors of sending us out? But before we do that, actually, Chris, again, thank you so much for coming on. Like I've said before, Chris is my inspiration for Star Wars podcasting, so it's been a real treat. He's given me the grace of being on his show a couple of times, the Sarlacc Pit, and always had a great time. And, you know, Chris, we hope to have you back again real soon if you would grace us once again with your presence in the Force. So, again.
Yeah, I would love to.
Thanks a lot. So, Jason, if you would, sign us off, my friend.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Wampa's Lair podcast. I'm Jason, and for Carl and Chris, we will see you next time in the Wampa's Lair.